You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 14 July. We've got Chinese import-export data due in half an hour. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nkunza, Sunland Private Wealth. I quickly want to touch on tariffs. That all happened last week. I was away. Apart from the 10-year, the market seems sanguine. Richmond update expected, and then U.S. banks kick off Q2 earnings. That starts tomorrow. We're going to chat with Banks of Africa, local payment tech. I'm interested in how we stack up against the world. And then we're going to talk with Sherry Tapfuma from Crew Invest. Staying invested, but I'm interested in the psychology of it. And also, how often or when, if at all, do you review a portfolio? This podcast is brought to you by StandLib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb: FSCA makes progress in cleaning up the financial services sector. Those guilty of serious misconduct are barred from the industry and referred for criminal prosecution. Business Day: Accelerate pushes ahead for rights offer despite 800 million rand risks. While all parties have expressed willingness to proceed, talks remain unresolved. Morning markets: the US was red on Friday. S&P down 0.33%. NASDAQ off 0.2%. The 10-year, 4.415, back above that 4.4. East is mostly green. Sydney's up 0.2%. Tokyo down 0.25%. Hong Kong up 0.01%. And Tencent up almost 0.5%. Commodities are green. Gold futures, 3,373. Brent, 70.50. Platinum, 1,457. And palladium, 1,284. That rally held on while I was off. The rand is 17.95. Bitcoin, 121,000 all-time highs. And top 40 opening call, 420 points to the red, a little under 0.5% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now with Nick Kunze, Sunland Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning. As mentioned in my intro there, I was often at the beach last week, but the tariffs were sort of being ratcheted up again from President Trump, 30% here, there, and everywhere. 1 August seems to be the important date. Markets, however, if we compare back to April, the market is saying either this isn't a problem or not going to happen. The 10-year, of course, telling that different story. You and I have talked before, the 10-year perhaps the better one to watch because, as I say, equities are sanguine.
Yeah, I'm only telling you, welcome back. I mean, you didn't miss a huge amount. I mean, yeah, I mean, either the market doesn't believe Mr. Trump or they continue to think that, you know, you're just going to keep pushing them back, which has been the game plan so far now, as you said, August the 1st. But, yeah, I'll be a little bit careful because I think on the one side, you know, the market is looking through this and looking forward to earnings season and putting this behind it. But on the other side of it, you know, the more he ratchets these rates up and the markets hit new time highs almost every single week, you do get the impression that the Trump administration might look at this and go, well, doesn't really have an effect. Let's keep them where they are. So I think you got to be careful. Looking at that 10-year note, though, yeah, it does tell a different story. And the last set of long-dated auction we had wasn't oversubscribed once again. Primary dealers had to come in. So, yeah, keep an eye on these rates. There is still a little bit of nerves. But just one more point quick, Simon. You mentioned Bitcoin, 121,000. I mean, that is a risk asset. And that does tell you everything we need to know. It is risk on.
Yeah, it is absolutely. That is your risk on. Richmond, I think we're going to get an update from them probably, I think, Wednesday. My notice, and the reason I raise it is because their sort of quarterly update in January, the market liked it, jumped 10%. Results 3 months later, market liked and jumped. This is Q1 for the period ending June. What do you think? I mean, has the market got used to them, or do you think we're still going to get surprises from them?
No, I think we saw surprise the upside. I really do. I think it was a cracking set of numbers. And just to get the exact time, it is 7:30 SA time. You are right, Wednesday morning. We are expecting an update out of Switzerland. No, I think, you know, it is. They have what is known as the Duralbe, that hard luxury, you know, very expensive watches that we can't afford, other precious goods. And that is the sweet spot of the luxury market at the moment. And Richemont's classic brands have been at the forefront of this market. I don't know, what is it, some 100 years?
Yeah.
You know, that That's where they play. And 90% of the group's earnings come from that jewelry. So, yeah, they have continued to deliver. They continue to surprise. They're sitting on a bucket load of cash. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, I think we get another set of really, really decent numbers. I think they're playing in a very good space for now, and they continue to ride the wave.
Yeah, it is that hard luxury. We can't afford it, but those who can seem immune to it. And then, of course, earnings season kicks off. Tuesday, we got JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, BlackRock, Citi. Wednesday, we get the Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley. What are we looking from them? Because, I mean, it's been, in essence, the market has been roaring ahead higher, and that's surely good, at least for their trading desks. And the U.S. consumer seems largely fine if we look at unemployment and inflation.
Yeah, I think this earnings season, not to put too much of a sort of weight on it, I think it is pretty important because mm-hmm. we've been sort of distracted with all the tariff noise and all the other geopolitics. Well, now's a chance to actually sort of get our teeth into some proper set of data, and I think they're going to be quite crucial for how the second half of the year pans out. I think they'll be okay. Mm-hmm. As you said, U.S. consumer still fine, retail sales are still fine. America's pretty much got full employment, although I think any sort of rhetoric from the presses afterwards, I mean, certainly from Mr. Diamond's been quite vocal recently, you know, obviously wait to hear from Morgan Stanley, Bank of America as well. Give us a bit of indication what the consumer's doing, but I suspect we'll see a little bit of a reporting that there is a little bit of concern or a little bit of slowdown, and the second half might be a little bit different. But on the first glance, I think the headline numbers will be as expected, but just a reminder to all of us that watch these markets, those are backward-looking numbers.
They are backward, and they are. We're now getting those daughters, which was post that Liberation Day back in, 2nd of April. We'll leave it there. Nick Kunze, Sanlam Private Wealth, always appreciate the early morning. Our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. What are you expecting from these bank results as the second quarter earnings season kicks off on Tuesday? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Israel Susgana, Chief Product and Scheme Officer at BankServe Africa. Israel, appreciate the time today. Financial inclusion, a phrase that is banned around a lot in the South African environment. But if we look for really proper financial inclusion, it needs to go beyond bank accounts. It needs to be payment tech as a hugely important part of that inclusion.
Good day, Simon. Thank you for having me on. Indeed, and it plays to the theme of digital payments playing a key role to enable financial inclusion and serving the underbanked. You know, we have to deal with the facts first and foremost. In the context of South Africa, 30 billion rand per year is spent on the production, securing, handling, transport of cash.
Wow.
So if you sit with that number for a few seconds, you think, whoa, what is the opportunity? How can, as a country, we can be more efficient? How can SA Inc. thrive by tackling on that cost of cash in the environment? And digital payments is that solution, which then underpins the financial inclusion solution that we talk about.
And we are seeing, I mean, to your point, I mean, that is a giant number. And we're seeing some really great advances in recent years. I mean, PayShap is one example. I use it. I love it. It's absolutely brilliant. It's instant. We're seeing great tech coming through in terms of the payment tech.
Indeed. And I think it's because technology is also getting to a point that it enables fast, reliable, secure transactions. So as those feats in technology take place, such as cloud computing, it allows for us to say, how do we bring that to the consumers? How do we make sure that the same confidence that is provided for corporate in Sandton doing a transaction is provided to a trader sitting in Vilakazi Street, for example? So really trying to make sure that continuation of that secure enablement of payments takes place irrespective of environments.
That's actually a great point. I hadn't thought of it that way because, I mean, you know, if I do an EFT from my bank and it's between different banks, it's going to be an overnight process. And I'm just used to that. Truthfully, what we're seeing now, and again, I go back to PayShap because it's one I've used, it's actually instant. It actually gives that trader in Vilakazi Street a slight edge on the corporate in Sandton.
Indeed. And I think this is where that efficiency plays through. You know, why does there need to be a delay in terms of funds being transferred? Is there a way to make sure that it is instant? Also, at the same time, providing the security that we spoke about. But that is the evolution of payments that's underway. And in the South African context, this is world class. This is exactly what economies need in order for them to thrive. You want to see that velocity of money flowing through the economy, not having delays that take place that could, you know, halt that progress that is required. So if anything, it's a time where technology payments are coming together for the betterment of SA Inc.
Yeah, and world class. I still have American friends who pay their rent with a check, and the younger listeners don't know what I'm referring to when I say a check. There's also, I mean, that massive cost of cash, which as a consumer, I see either depositing into the bank, but more realistically, probably for the trader in Vilakazi, is at the drawing at the ATM. There's a cost around that. In essence, if we sort of slice that lower, it's also putting money into the trader's hands. They've got less transaction fee, which is hugely important.
And working capital. So you suddenly have that instant working capital available to you, which can allow for your business to operate, the oil of the economy flowing freely. And I think that's where the biggest learning is to make sure that payments has as little friction as possible. So the solutions that Bank of Africa is designing in conjunction with the Reserve Bank, in conjunction with the banks, and even now with non-banks, is to make sure that payments can take place as frictionless as possible. And it should be happening in the background. You shouldn't notice it. You know, if I think back to the history of Bank of Africa, launching EFTs in 1975, Stats, which maybe for the older listeners, the brand that allowed for interoperable ATM withdrawals. You've got this all in the background taking place. It means that it's time for additional change because technology is evolving, because regulations are also opening up to allow for the latest and greatest to come through. And PayShop is an example of that from 2023.
Yeah.
You know, we've sitting around about 285 billion in transaction value since it's launched. And that growth continues to have that multiplier effect where we should see that hitting comfortably in the 500 billion space at some point in time.
You mentioned working in conjunction. I imagine that is a huge part of it. It is collaboration between the different parts of it. It's banks, it's regulators, it's everyone sort of working together on it. These can't happen in silos.
And Simon, that's because there's an understanding that this is an ecosystem. In order for an ecosystem to thrive, all stakeholders need to be around the table. And that's why it's great to see the regulator and the central bank being involved in those conversations. It's excellent to see the banks creating space for retailers, MNOs, and fintechs to be part of that. So if anything, that ecosystem can thrive because of the collaboration that is taking place. There's not one party that can make this a success at all. It has to be a combination of all those stakeholders.
Is there a sense, I mean, chatting with you, and again, referring back to my friends in America, we're kind of like, I mean, where are we in the global space? My sense is we're probably right up there, if not, frankly, leading.
Indeed. And there's some global rankings that place us in the top five. And especially when it comes to digital payments, when it comes to our neobanks, digital banks, we have some great examples in the South African context. We definitely have the evolution of our traditional banks getting to that level, challenging the status quo, internet banking, app banking, with all their financial reports showing how digital banking is increasing. So there is definitely a benchmark that is set by South Africa that other countries are watching and other central banks are observing to see how they can get to that point. But they all sit with the same challenge. It's that cost of cash, that dependency on cash. And that is exactly what needs to change in order for the economy to thrive by getting adoption of those digital payments.
Yeah, and it is a thriving economy, right up from the trader in Vilakazi all the way up to the corporate in Sandton. We'll leave it there. That's Israel Skosana, Chief Product and Scheme Officer, Banks of Africa. Appreciate the time. Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Sherry Tapfumi, Associate Financial Planner at Crew Invest. Sherry, appreciate the early morning time. Volatile markets, typically volatile, particularly on the downside, they are scary. Long-term investors, we understand, we need to resist that urge to panic. This almost perhaps more than sort of financial, it becomes an emotional part and that emotional discipline to stay invested when your gut response is to panic and hide under the couch.
Thank you for having me, Simon. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I think volatility is there's nothing wrong when you talk about, you know, investing and market volatility, because volatility is really the very nature of investing. It's the reason why long-term investors are rewarded, because that's the reward you get for just taking on some discomfort to capture long-term growth. And I mean, you can imagine if markets went up in a straight line, there really would be no risk in them. And I know, we see this with clients all the time. Short-term market movements can feel unsettling, but over time, they really affect that long-term trend. And from history, we always see that markets recover from these downturns and sometimes can even go on to reach new highs.
Yeah.
But that's only for those people that, you know, remain invested. When you panic and exit during a drop, you're risking two things, right? You're locking in losses and you also miss the rebound. And that often happens really, really fast. So when we talk about successful long-term investing, it's not about avoiding that discomfort and hiding under the pillow. It's almost about like the endurance that comes with it, with a plan.
And does that almost, in some sense, and I've had this thought before, it almost turns financial planners such as yourself into, I don't know, my therapist, in a sense, that you've got to talk me off the edge where I'm panicking and you've got to remind me, hang on, this is what happens to markets and this is how it plays and don't panic and help me understand that process.
And that's where, you know, emotional discipline sort of comes into play. And I think as financial planners, as you correctly say, that's where we add our value, because our job really help clients stay grounded, provide some perspective, and just remind them why they invested in the first place. And when we see the difference between successful investors and those that are not so successful, emotional discipline then becomes a differentiator.
Yeah.
I mean, fear and panic, it's all natural to humans, but that often leads to poor decisions, you know, and that's when people sell during a crash or they're chasing performance at peak. So if you have a plan and you're working with a financial planner, it gives you something to hold on to, especially when emotions are running high. So it's almost like you're in your car and you're trying to get to a destination and you put your GPS on. You don't just change the routes because you hit traffic. I mean, you stay focused and you focus on the destination.
Yeah. And it's also always that reminder, and you mentioned it in a note you wrote, yeah, the downside risk is limited in the equity market, but the upside is unlimited. And that's an important dichotomy. A quick last question. Reviewing our portfolios. I mean, we build portfolios for the long term, you know, measuring in years, truthfully, in decades for many of us. How often should we sort of go back? What would trigger a review of a portfolio? Or is this more sort of a calendar thing? In other words, it's once a year you review, rather than perhaps volatile markets?
Yeah. So I'd say once a year is sort of a good rhythm for most investors. But the real triggers should not be about the changes on the market. It really should be about the changes in your life. So things like getting married and changing jobs, maybe having kids. Those are the moments where your goals and your risk profile might shift. And your investment or your portfolio should actually reflect that. So yes, market movements may, you know, prompt a conversation, but they shouldn't really warrant action. And the whole point is to just stay aligned with your long-term objectives and not react to every headline.
Yeah, but I like that as well. Agreed 100%. And it's those lifestyle changes, as you say, getting married, maybe it's the kids leaving, maybe it's having kids. It's those big lifestyles as well, which would potentially prompt a review. We'll leave it there. The show, Tapfuma, Associate Financial Planner, Crew Invest. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. No poll from Friday. Dudu was standing in for me. My thanks to Dudu for standing in all of last week. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app. 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow. Extended dollar weakness.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the Money.